So, Chris, did you see this CNN article talking about how Congress is considering legislation to address the NIL slash transfer portal? What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's good. I mean, it makes total sense for them to step in this instance. It's an interesting article and an interesting scenario because as it stands right now, you have different laws, regulations from state to state. And so one of the fears, I think it was the SEC commissioner pointed out, is that you see states will start to build walls around their recruiting grounds, you know, to try to work some sort of a competitive advantage because their state has stronger or maybe more lax rules and regulations governing sports than the next state over does or a higher regulatory state does. And so they're looking for consistency because last time I looked, the NCAA is nationwide. It's not a state-to-state deal, and it's also big business. So from an interstate commerce standpoint, it makes all the sense in the world for the federal government to step in and regulate it, that it's constitutional. And, you know, the bottom line, Lance, is that I don't think there's anybody outside of the NCAA itself, or the Supreme Court who handed down the ruling that really opened this Pandora's box, that think this is a good idea, that think this that both the NIL money and the transfer portal are good for college athletics. They're not. They suck, and something needs to be done about it.
You stole my term. I was going to say Pandora's box, but yeah, I agree. I mean, that was the thing that when the whole talk about NIL and all these paying college athletes and all that, it's not like they don't deserve it, but there's constantly going to be problems with equity, or inequity, I guess. There's going to be problems with different states that have different rules, or there's going to be problems with the transfer portal, like you say. Just some coach could walk up in a, what's the word? In an end of game handshake line or whatever, could just walk up and be like, "Hey, come to Missouri. We've got some money for you. If you talk to Wendy's over here, you probably could get a pretty sweet NIL." I mean, you can get players at any point. I mean, that makes sense. It just muddies up the waters of what's going on at the college level, and it's just going to get worse until they get a handle on it. And I don't know if they do because there's just so many factors going into it that really creates a chaotic situation. Because you never know when it's going to step up where they say, "Hey, it needs to be equal across the board," or they step up and it needs to be this. Or my thought, and I'm surprised this hasn't happened yet, what's going to happen when a company's like, "Hey, we're offering you money if you play all these games." So suddenly, these players aren't just being given money, but it's restricted upon their performance or their participation in all these things. It's gonna be interesting as it continues to grow.
Well,
But it, you go ahead.
there's all sorts of angles too to look at from a graduation standpoint. That's a concern. You're going to see players left behind. I know that there. I don't know what the numbers are off the top of my head, but there's a healthy percentage of players that enter the portal that don't land. You know, so now they're walking on. But there's also players who are entering the portal because they lost their scholarship, they got yanked. So it's really a hot mess all across the board. And producer Troy pointed out too that don't forget that certain conference commissioners, and I'll lump in here school presidents, athletic directors, they might benefit from it, certainly more than others will. It's not their money after all. It's private money coming in. And all you have to do is look at FCS and social media over the last couple of days. And I've seen a couple of posts where North Dakota State is potentially losing three players who have been offered six-figure NIL deals. And they're going to enter the transfer portal. And so the next sentence is, there was an emergency meeting of the North Dakota State collective, NIL collective, last night, like, "Hey guys, pony up. We got to keep hold on to these guys." So now it's a bidding war. And I mean, just there's just a whole bunch of parts of this that just stink to high heaven.
But that will bring us into the show. This is the FCS Wedge presented by AnyGivenSaturday.com. I'm Lance Burch reporting out of Bainville, Montana. With me, as always, Chris Callum out of old old exciting Jeannie Washington and Mika leaping up near the microphone. You might hear her right now. Just the boisterous cat of the FCS Webs, the official mascot that will bring us in. We've got an exciting weekend ahead. First off, we start a lot of televised games this weekend. I guess that's just each year we get a little bit more excitement. But the first one off, we have Furman coming over to Montana on ESPN2, 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 7 p.m. local time. Furman at Montana, kind of an interesting battle, wouldn't you say, Chris?
Oh, I think it's a very interesting battle. I think similar teams, they're both excellent on defense, especially against the run. Balanced offenses, they take care of the ball, don't turn it over a lot. Very solid quarterback play. The main difference, and you know where I'm going to go with this one, the strength of schedule. Montana's ranked 28th, Furman is 70. The best Paladin wins are only as good as the SoCon in Chattanooga and Mercer, and we've discussed this already. Meanwhile, Montana has two wins against seeded teams, as well as a third win against the Sac State team that made or that had a playoff road win this year. So forget about the weather conditions. They're going to be talked about and southern teams and all that stuff. Montana, I think, is better on paper, and I think that they win this game.
And this game's a rematch of possibly my favorite game, the 2001 National Championship between Furman and Montana. I remember it very well. But anyways, Montana takes down Furman in what should have been, I'll forever be salty about this, 13-0. But Furman completed a Hail Mary on the very last play off a tipped pass to lose 13-6 instead. A very dominating performance for Montana's defense. We might see a similar game, a game dominated on the ground. I think Furman that year had Chris Ivory. Was he Walter Payton? If not, he was one of the top level running backs. And then Montana had Johansi Humphrey or whatever, two elite level running backs. We don't have that same situation now, but we still have very good running teams. Tyler Huff, very dual threat. As we saw this last weekend, Furman got it together with a couple of running backs. But anyways, they've got people healthy after being hurt towards the end of the year. Furman's got both Grant Robinson and Dominic Roberto. And then, of course, Tyler Huff, the ageless quarterback that plays very well, both running the ball and throwing the ball. But then Montana just goes deep. They got people left and right that are playing just very dominant, and their defense stepping up, and you know they play well at home in the playoffs. It's a very exciting game in Missoula. They're back. Montana State goes down, so they know it's their time to shine in the state of Montana after Montana State's kind of held the candle for the last half a dozen years. This is their chance. I do agree. This is a big step for Montana. It's a tough team, though, coming in. Furman, Montana versus SoCon, always a great battle in the playoffs. We'll see if it is again. I think this will be the fourth SoCon team to come to Montana, maybe the fifth. I think just the fourth in the playoffs to come to Missoula.
I remember
Georgia Southern, Wofford, and App State. And I don't think Chattanooga will come. So, yeah, Appalachian State, Georgia Southern, Wofford all came. So now we get Furman, another of the elites, and it should be a battle. Next team down, is this going to be like last weekend? I don't know. Villanova played well, but they go to South Dakota State. Chris, does Villanova stand a chance?
Not much. They're better than Mercer, no question about that. I think they can keep up with the Jacks a little bit on offense. Their defense can be solid at times. I mean, at least statistically, they're holding points holding teams under 20 points per game at 18. But the Jacks defense is astonishingly better. I mean, they're 10.3 points per game allowed. That's going back to the 2000s as far as elite defenses go. The Wildcats run to set up the pass. They have six running backs over 100 yards on the season. They're led by Jalen Jackson. He's their workhorse. He's had almost 1,000 yards on the season. Connor Watkins, kind of like Tyler Huff, seems like he's been there forever because he has. He's an experienced quarterback, so they have some things going for him. I don't think it's going to be a massive blowout unless Villanova gets sloppy. They are -2 in turnover margin, so they don't take care of the ball that well. But I think this is more of a two-score game, maybe a three-score game if things get a little bit out of hand.
Well, yeah, Connor Watkins in his second year as a starter for Villanova does well dual threat, and that's often the thing to – that's the – what's the right word? That's kind of the key to stay in a game with these elite level Missouri Valley defenses, the North Dakota States of the years, and then South Dakota State, Holy Cross a couple years ago. I mean, last year? Yeah, last year. They were the one team that really competed with South Dakota State because they had Matthew Sluka doing both. Connor Watkins, if he can step it up on the ground, and then the rest of their running game can get things going, they do stand a little bit of a chance. I do think Villanova, yes, they lost to Albany, but across the board, I thought they played the best in the CAA this year. They were just dominating teams. They only had one. They didn't actually have any single-digit games this year. They haven't played a close game all year. They just dominated teams, or they got smoked by Albany. But anyways, they've been playing well throughout the board, throughout the year. I think they stand a chance to compete with South Dakota State, but South Dakota State's a different animal. They are miles better than every other team right now. So, and it still probably will be a couple touchdown results here.
Well, Lance, you threw me for a loop there because I said Connor Watkins had been there for a long time, and you said, well, it's only a second year starting, and you're right, technically, but he did get a lot of playing time in 2020, and then in 2019 is when he first played. So he must have had a pretty good statistical game that year because I know he's been there a long time. So nonetheless, experienced quarterback, I don't think it's going to be enough to carry the day.
Well, I mean, you didn't have to dig yourself in a hole too much more. I was trying to save you there by just saying 2 year. He gained 116 yards passing in 2021 and 72 yards passing in 2020. So that's the amount of games he played.
Well, that was the COVID year. Nobody had huge statistics during the COVID year.
Yeah, but he completed 5 passes. So let's settle down.
He knocked off the Stony Brook Seawolves in 2020, Lance. That's a big accomplishment.
Is ESPN wrong?
Our sources are different. All right, let's move on to the
maybe
next
they
game.
Are. Yeah, let's keep on moving. I guess they haven't been covering stats that well, but no, that's got him. Yeah, he threw 4 passes against Stony Brook. But anyways, we're moving on. North Dakota State at South Dakota, it's always tough to beat a team twice. We've seen it a couple times where it works out, but goodness gracious, South Dakota escaping with wins left and right, and now they get North Dakota State, a team on fire as much as anybody else right now. What's this game? What's going to happen here, Chris?
Well, it's especially tough to beat the Bison twice in the season. You know, it's at South Dakota State for a few years. South Dakota, strong on defense. The difference is they're only decent against the run, but absolutely lock down opposing passing attacks. It's usually the opposite. You know, they establish a line of scrimmage. A great defense does take away the run. They usually, you know, establish a solid front against the run, take that away first, force a team into passing situations, and then on it goes. So with South Dakota State, that their strength really is in stopping the pass. Otherwise, they're giving up 120 so yards per game against the run. But so are the Bison. You know, so it's kind of a toss-up there as far as advantages go. Cam Miller only passed for 78 yards against Montana State, and he's been better this year. I mean, North Dakota State, I think, has increased his attempts. I think they passed the ball fairly effectively or better than they have ever before, but that certainly wasn't the case last week. But they didn't have to. They rushed it for 296 yards. In the first meeting against these two teams, he had a little bit better game than that. He threw for 159, I think a couple of touchdowns in that game. But I'm guessing North Dakota State's going to go back to what brought them through their awesome streak, and that is, you know, play great defense and run the ball, stay on schedule, limit the amount of possessions. That plays into South Dakota's hands a little bit too because their offense, you know, isn't exactly a high-flying type. But I think if the Bison can run the ball and take that part of the game, I think they get the win here. I'm not going to be shocked either way, though. I think this is a really close game again.
I think it's just reactions from watching NDSU so many times over the years. But with the momentum they have right now and South Dakota's relative inexperience in the playoffs, I just think NDSU is going to play very well this weekend. Granted, I said that last weekend where it was a very close game, but Tommy Mellott stepped up, kept Montana State in that game the whole time. South Dakota does not have a Tommy Mellott. they really need to have their best defensive performance this year because the Bison are playing so well right now. I think the Bison are the favorites. I think they win, I'd say even by 10, but South Dakota's really going to need to play expert level right now, maybe even better than they played when they beat North Dakota State. Next game on the line, you'd be surprised if I told you this, but Idaho has not scored more than 30 points, so more than 29 points, since October 7th. You look at their roster, you think, man, they've got Anthony Woods, they've got Javonte McCoy, they've got Hayden Hatton. That's an elite-level offense. Well, no, they've been having a lot of lower-scoring games playing with their defense. Now they get to host Albany, who's got top-level offense, improved defense, though. Very, very intriguing game, wouldn't you say, Chris?
Yeah, that was in my notes as well. I mean, things get harder for Idaho because Albany has a quality defense. I don't know if it's quite as good as Southern Illinois', but their offense is much better. And I'm not surprised at all about the Vandals not scoring as many points. I mean, I've watched it and kept track of it. And I think part of it is Javonte McCoy. I think he struggled a little bit, and he did not look good against the Salukis. And the Salukis also shut down the Vandal rushing attack. Can Albany control the line of scrimmage like Southern Illinois can? I'm not sure. I also think that Idaho has a few wrinkles up its sleeve, and I would expect them to maybe try to create some offense through some trick plays and some surprises and whatnot. This is where coaches, you know, they make their bank is in game planning. So it's going to be a fun week for both coaching staffs. I think Idaho is a slight favorite, but that's really only because they're at home. And then obviously the cross-country travel for Albany, you know, we'll downplay it and say it's not a big deal. And we have examples where teams overcome it. But I think it is a deal. I think it's part of it, and I think it's challenging. I think the Vandals need to score more than 20 here to win. I don't expect as low a scoring a game this time. I think that the North Dakota State and South Dakota game is the game of the weekend. I think this one's maybe the sleeper of the weekend. Stay up late because this one's on at 10 o'clock East.
Well, one interesting setup of this game is you all usually take this point, and I'm surprised you didn't make it when you're talking about Albany's defense or whatever, but they've played a lot of weak offenses. They started the year against good offenses. They shut down Fordham. They shut down Villanova, but we get into October, and they get beat by New Hampshire, and then since then, a lot of weak offenses on that slate. Or you look at the two schedules. Albany has played one top 30 Massey team and then a couple FBS teams, whereas Idaho has played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 top 20 level Massey teams and also two FBS teams. So war of attrition, Idaho has had a lot of tough level battles. They've played just the Wolves the whole way through. Just a lot of solid teams. They played all the teams that made the playoffs in the Big Sky besides them, and then had a couple FBS games, like I mentioned, in the non-conference, and then the world beaters in Lamar, too. So we know they've had a good slate, so I think they're going to be able to build upon that, just having played solid opponents. But like you said, Poffenbarger, he can compete, and Albany's got a very good defense. It'll be an interesting game. I like the Vandals, just because I think they're more battle-tested than Albany, but it'll be fun. It's always fun when the Big Sky and the CAA get together. It's two styles of offense or styles of play that you don't really see match up. You think about who did Maine beat a couple years ago? Weber State. Maine goes into Weber State, and then they went to Eastern Washington. So, it's always fun when we see
Eastern
those
championship
games.
Year we face, in Eastern championship year, we face Nova and the semis in Delaware in the championship game. So, yeah, it is always a fun matchup.
Yes, indeed. I'll still always wonder how Eastern beat Villanova in that game with old Matt douchebag Caesar running the show for
Matt
Villanova.
Johnson took him out.
Oh, there we go. Cheap shot. Eastern Washington does what Montana couldn't do. Takes him out. Okay,
hey,
I get
it wasn't
it.
A cheap shot. Matt Johnson was a safety that could take away half the field, and that's what he did.
Oh, okay. I was just nicknaming your team, that's all. But I digress. That will wrap us up for the preview show. And once again, we've got Chris Callum out of Cheney, Washington, then our producer, Troy Burnt, and I am Lance Burnt. hope you guys have a great weekend. Four very good games this upcoming weekend. Should be some great results. And we'll talk to you guys next week.